journalism and civic engagement. We aim to foster thoughtful dialogue and encourage listeners to think critically about the information that they receive from all media sources. Project Censored is a 501c3 nonprofit organization and does not endorse or oppose any candidate for public office. We have a lot of tools, resources, and information over at our website. Again, that's projectcensored.org. Please also follow us on social media at Project Censored. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison, genocide rules.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, February 21st at 4 p.m. for a special Black History Month roundtable discussion on The Motif, Reimagined, a Jazz Sensibility. We welcome four amazing contributors to Portland and Multnomah County civic life in a discussion on public health, politics, and protest. Featuring Dr. Gina Gulliam, Dr. James Mason, the Honorable Saran Kopp, and the Honorable Ron Herndon. That's a special Black History Month roundtable discussion during The Motif on Saturday, February 21st at 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week.
It's a really, really interesting truth to watch Black women continuously show up, continuously save us from ourselves while absorbing so much abuse, being taken for granted so aggressively. Black women show up every time.
I'm Ramses Ja of the QR Code and Civic Cipher. Today on Sprouts, we're talking about the support that Black women give the United States and how strikes are meaningful action. So welcome. The man you are about to hear from is a man who really deserves the day off, but he is here anyway. He is the Q in the QR code, and he goes by the name of Q Ward.
And the voice that you just heard went to Costco and bought all the compassion, all the benefit of the doubt, and all the grace in bulk just for himself, and uses it all the time. He is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
That's my name. We got a special show in store for you today. This is a special episode, and we do want to take a moment to talk about Black History Month. So we found a source that I think helps paint the picture here. This is from Fox 11, Los Angeles. So, and I want to credit the author, Heather Miller. I think this explains it quite a bit. Black History Month goes back 100 years. The 100th annual celebration of Black achievement lasts through the end of February. Here's what to know about this year's commemoration. How did Black History Month start? Well, the backstory is Black History Month dates back to 1926 when Carter G. Woodson, a founder of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, created Negro History Week to encourage Black Americans to become more interested in their own history and heritage. Quote, I think Black folks understood what they had contributed to America's historical narrative, but no one was talking about it, unquote. Kay Whitehead, ASALH's president, told the Associated Press in an interview last year. quote, no one was centralizing it until Dr. Carter G. Woodson was in 1926, unquote. Woodson chose February for Negro History Week because it had the birthdays of President Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. Lincoln was born February 12th, and Douglass, a former slave, did not know his exact birthday, celebrated his on February 14th. In 1976, 50 years after the first celebration, the ASALH officially shifted from a week to a month and from Negro history to Black history. Another half century later, Whitehead stresses that Black history is not just for Black people, it's for all people. Quote, if you're in an environment and everybody in the environment is white, you need Black History Month more than ever because you need to understand that the world, even though you like to believe it fits into this box, it does not, unquote, Whitehead said. So, yeah, this felt kind of special. And of course, the way our programming times out, we thought we could give a little bit more insight. Now, this is something that we've known for some time. We've covered the history of Black History Month, coming from Negro History Week all the way up until the present day. I think we might have done our last one in 2023, 2024, somewhere back then. But to finally hit the 100-year mark feels very special. And I know that in the comments, I've been seeing a lot of hate because that is what this administration has whipped up. A lot of people pushing back. Why do we need this? Blah, blah, blah. It was the same thing that happened during Kwanzaa. After Christmas was over, and people were like, oh, it's a made-up holiday, as though every holiday isn't a made-up holiday, right? But, you know, this one is Black, and so people want to attack it. Not all people, trolls, to be fair, but enough people to where it's concerning, and I feel like if you're an ally, which a lot of people that listen to our programming are allies, we should give you this so that you have the context. Well, why Black history is important is because there is a different perspective on life and on history. One of the things that you might know to be true and take for granted if you are not a Black person in this country, with roots in this country, is, you know, your ancestry. Even if you don't really know it, there's nothing that would tell you that it would be awful. I mean, if you do know it, maybe you came from a great explorer or a king or, you know, some person on your mom's side going back 13 generations was a, they wrote songs about this individual, whatever your story is. If you can trace it back that far, maybe there's something special there. I can trace my story back to a slave. That's it. And to be fair, slavery is white history. Overcoming slavery is Black history. And I'm not the first person to say that, but I want to make sure that I say that here. But again, understanding your history, understanding what contributions you've made and your people have made, it lets you know exactly how far you can go, exactly what's possible. Those things are very important, certainly to a younger mind, right? If you don't know your history, especially nowadays, then you think all of this is normal. You think, oh yeah, well, Black people are just supposed to be in jail and Black people just commit crimes because that's what Black people do. And you don't have context and you don't have ways of explaining things. I certainly grew up with a lot of gaps and blind spots. And I would always wonder, like, why would I be born and I have to be with the poorest people, the people that are the most, you know, the ones with the guns and the shooting and the drug problems and the blah, blah, and this and that and the third. And then once you get into the weeds and you realize, oh, okay, there are systems in place. There are people that have made decisions that affected these outcomes and so forth. You know, then you start to have context. And if you know what ails you or where the source of your problems are, then you can seek to fix them. And so again, Black history let you know that Black people have prospered at different points in time in this country. Black people have made significant contributions here and there. Not just overcoming circumstances, but no, scientific contributions and other political contributions and educational contributions and so forth and so on. And so you don't grow up with a small view of yourself and of your people. And critically, the same is true for non-Black people. Because if I felt that way about Black people being Black, imagine what's possible for a non-Black person to feel about Black people if all they know is what they see and they have no historical context. Q, I know that this is a big deal, 100 years of Black history. Please.
This is exactly what you said, right? If the history books only taught that we were captured, enslaved, and then free criminals, what people have to realize is that the transatlantic slave trade, as cruel and inhumane as it was, it kind of killed people that were a part of it twice, right? Physically harmed, lynched, burned, trafficked, assaulted, all these things, but also not just taken from their physical land, but taken from where they are from. Like, as a question, where are you from? What is your ethnic? Like, a, all links to our, do you know what I'm saying? Our ancestry, our ethnicity, our homes was taken away too. So now, as the descendants of slaves, so much of where I'm from does not exist. And I'm sure there's a expensive and expansive and involved way to try to trace that back. And I've done some of that work, but without chronicling our history properly, those that oppressed us, those that killed us, those that robbed us and took everything that we ever had from us would get to tell a story where all we've ever been is property and criminals. And you wouldn't realize that so many of your favorite things, activities, technology, tools, toys, games, cell phones, the internet, all of these things came from the electricity, from the minds of brilliant Black people. Just as a reminder, like, hey, we participated in the creation of this thing called life, and that needs to be acknowledged.
All right, moving on. In other news, this is from the BIN. Amanda Gorman has shared a powerful new poem honoring Alex Preddy, the 37-year-old ICU nurse and U.S. citizen who was killed by federal immigration officers in Minneapolis, using poetry once again to document grief, injustice, and national reckoning. Gorman posted the poem titled For Alex Jeffrey Preddy on Instagram over the weekend. In the piece, she describes Preddy's killing as both a betrayal and an execution, framing the violence as a rupture between the state and the people it claims to protect. Home arrives amid widespread outrage over Preddy's death and renewed scrutiny of federal immigration enforcement, particularly as questions mount around accountability and use of force. Earlier this month, Gorman also used her platform to honor Renee Nicole Good, another U.S. citizen killed by a federal immigration officer in Minneapolis on January 7th. In a separate Instagram post accompanying that poem, Gorman wrote that she was horrified by the ongoing violence that ICE wages upon our community. That was a quote. And also adds, quote, discrimination and brutality on an unconscionable scale. Gorman has emphasized that her work is meant not only to mourn individual lives, but to remember all those lost to state violence. In her post honoring Good, she also referenced others killed by ICE, including Keith Porter Jr., and noted that dozens of people have died in ICE custody in recent years. The 27-year-old poet who became a global figure after reciting The Hill We Climb at President Joe Biden's 2021 inauguration has repeatedly turned to poetry in moments of national crisis. Her past work has addressed the Uvalde shooting, reproductive rights, and racial injustice, positioning poetry as both memorial and resistance. This is something that I feel very strongly about, because I do want to share this poem. I think it's important that people hear the words of this great poet, and also there's something I want to add on the other side of that. Please bear with me. For Alex Jeffrey Preddy, murdered by ICE, January 24, 2026, by Amanda Gorman. We wake with no words, just woe and wound. Our country shooting us in the back is not just brutality, it's jarring betrayal, not enforcement, but execution. A message: love your people and you will die. Yet our greatest threat isn't the outsiders among us, but those among us who never look within. Fear not those without papers, but those without conscience. Know that to care intensively, united, is to carry both pain, dark horror for today, and a profound, daring hope for tomorrow. We can feel we have nothing to give and still beloved this world, waiting, trembling to change. If we cannot find words, may we find the will. If we ever lose hope, may we never lose our humanity. The only undying thing is mercy, the courage to open ourselves like doors, hug our neighbor, and save one more bright, impossible life. I want to take a moment here, because for the people that don't know, Amanda Gorman is a Black woman. One of the things that I don't even need to hold it to be true. It is factual. Is that black women continue to show up and save this country from itself. We covered a story about the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense in Philadelphia, now known as the Black Lions. And I know that there are people that left comments saying that, you know, the Black Panthers are racist and against white people and all this sort of stuff, which isn't true. It's never been true. Indeed, there have been Black Panthers who were white, and there were even White Panthers as well, which is a separate aligned organization. And in the history that I know, black people have loved on white people consistently, even those that really didn't deserve it. I believe it is consistent with the nature of black women, Q will agree with me here, to love first, which is why it's so heartbreaking when we wade through this muck of a reality in which we live and daily come to terms with the fact that black women are always, almost always, last on the list for everything good, first on the list for everything bad. We believe that black women are as close to God as we can be. We know that black women gave birth to Homo sapiens sapiens, our species. All of us are related to black women. They are our mothers, and I forgot where I've heard it, but the word mother is akin to the word God for a baby. And what are we if not but babies that got to hang out for a long time? So we haven't lost sight of the fact that black women are the closest that we will get to God on this planet. This poem here is an example of a black woman still showing up. I realize that black women were very, very fatigued after the last election. And there were a lot of conversations of, we're going to sit this one out. And I'm not going to speak for all black women. I can't do that, of course. But I know that that is something that the handful that did say that sort of stuff may have said that out of frustration. But generally speaking, the culture of black women is to be supportive, to help, to give, to pray for you. And it's a very sad thing to know that black women are often forgotten or left behind or mistreated or misused. You and I vowed to be warriors on behalf of black women. And it's moments like this where this black woman will use her platform to say, this was an injustice to this man. This man was not black, as you know. Alex Pretty was a white man. But to God, we're all God's children. So when I say that black women have shown up to save us time and time again, I think this is an example that you can circle back to if you ever hear that again in the future and know what that means. This is obviously a beautiful work, but I think the spirit of black women is encompassed in this action. Any thoughts to add here, Q?
You guys can hear the emotion. And I know how semantics get, especially when it's our show. There's a couple of times the word white was used for black and vice versa. Black women are often last on every list that's for good and first on every list that's for bad, is what Ramses was expressing. And Alex Pretty was not a black man. He was a white man, is what Ramses was expressing there. But you guys can hear the emotion and the heartbreak of the reality that sits at the feet of black women perpetually, absorb all of the harm while simultaneously being the creator and the savior every time. Be abused and oppressed, have every resource taken from you. Because just like Ramses said, the word mother is akin to God, is akin to earth. Those words and this use are synonymous with one another. The creator of everything, where everything is born from and grows from. It's a really, really interesting truth to watch black women continuously show up, continuously save us from ourselves while absorbing again so much abuse, being taken for granted so aggressively. And it's interesting because out of sheer exhaustion, you saw Black women on the internet say that they would sit this one out. We knew that that was performative frustration when we heard it. Black women show up every time. It's like telling your child not to do something and pretending that right before they hurt themselves that you're not going to intervene because they need to learn the lesson. Except Mother Earth, black woman, her heart won't allow her to sit it out and watch you suffer, even if you asked for it, even if you pushed her out of the way to get to the suffering that you're now enduring. She's still going to show up to save you because that's what black women do. So, you know, the frustration of trying to be the shield, trying to be the champion, trying to be the warrior, and the hurt that comes with that. You guys may have heard me express that as what failure feels like. And I think because we did not have this conversation before, I think that's what you hear and the emotional release that you just witnessed from Ramses.
Thank you for that, Q.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Ramses Ja of the QR Code. Today on Sprouts, we are talking about the support that black women give the United States and how strikes are meaningful action. On Friday, January the 30th, all across the country, activists held no school, no work, no shopping demonstrations against President Trump's surge of immigration enforcement. Thousands marched in downtown Minneapolis, where Nicole Good and Alex Preddy were fatally shot by ICE immigration officers. This from the BIN. Organizers say the deaths have sparked national outrage and renewed scrutiny of immigration and customs enforcement. According to the campaign's website, participants were asked to observe no work, no school, no shopping for the day as a way to disrupt business as usual and demand accountability. Calls for participation spread across social media and community forums, with organizers framing the shutdown as a response to what they describe as unchecked federal power. Labor leaders have also spoken out. Democracy Now! Is reporting that 700 businesses closed in Minneapolis for the strike. No matter what, people spending money makes the world go round. It's been that way for thousands of years. Which means at the beginning, middle, and end of the day, the power is with the people. I've said on the show many times that if you don't like the government, then become ungovernable. And in a consumer-based economy like the one in which we live in this country, becoming ungovernable means doing things like this. All right, I'm going to earn my money. I'm going to spend less of it, right? And we have fattened ourselves with consumerism in this country. The things that we buy, many of them are not, strictly speaking, necessary. Food, of course, is necessary. Gas is, of course, necessary. You know, you have to go to work. You have to get home. There are some things, I won't pretend that this isn't true. There are some things that are necessary. But a significant amount of things that we spend money on are simply not necessary. And feeding this economy, when this president and this administration gets to take credit for it, we need to realize that that's a choice that we're making. Starving this economy so that this administration and this president gets blamed for it is the power that you still wield. And if collectively we choose to wield that power, then we can teach everyone a lesson, because all of these people think that they want to live in a country that everything else stays the same, except they have less brown people in it. You know, it's kind of what they're on, right? Or that everything stays the same, but these people have rights that these people don't, or these people have outcomes that these people don't, or this is the natural order of things, whatever it is that their position is. If we disagree with that and we don't have, you know, they're not listening to our voices, they're not listening to our activism, they're not listening to our elected officials, they're just ignoring us. They're literally relegating us to the margins of society. Well, indeed, we have the power of the dollar to disrupt what would otherwise be business as usual for them. Now, there are people who would push back on this and say, well, you know what, even if all the black dollars got pulled into the same pot, what difference does it make to, you know, this administration? Even if all the brown dollars got pulled into the same pot or whatever, even pick a smaller community. And that's a valid concern. You know, people should be mindful of how much strength is actually being wielded in these protests, these boycotts. But I want to remind you, as a person that has, you know, my master's is in business. And that's not to beat my chest or brag. The truth is that I'm just saying that to say this is something I've studied. Okay. I know that many of the companies that exist on a national level have a lot of debt to service. This is how they acquire buildings and warehouses and infrastructure and inventory. It's all debt. It's all borrowed, meaning they have to service that debt, meaning that there is a ready assumption that there will be customers in their store spending money. And how these people get so rich is because of the scale of the operation. It's such a huge scale of the operation that if they are only profitable, you know, 10%, you know, a tiny amount, then that's a fantastic year. If they only have 10% growth year after year, that's they're kicking butt. And once you realize that, you realize, oh, we don't need to pull 100% of the resources away from, let's say, Target. We can just pull our own dollars collectively away from Target and they will sink because they cannot service their debt. And you know what happens? They file for bankruptcy and then they get broken down and pieced apart and absorbed into some other organization or end up under some other ownership or direction. And that direction might actually account for your politics because it has to account for your dollars. This is the power that you still have. And so for me, and I'll speak for Q, we don't need to go to Target no more because, again, we understand the fat that we have accumulated under this consumer-based economy and society. We don't need to walk into Target for anything ever again. Ever again. And so we won't. And you think Walmart's getting a free pass? When Costco exists, you think Amazon's getting a free pass when eBay exists? No, we can vote with our dollars. And if we so choose, we can withhold our dollars entirely, which is the call of this shutdown. We can withhold all of our dollars. And then we can let this government know exactly how we feel. When we need to spend, we spend with people whose values are aligned with ours and companies are aligned. And when we don't need to spend, we simply don't. Or whatever, however you get creative, if you need to. But look around. Do you really need another pair of shoes? Do you really need another flat screen? Do you really, whatever it is you're buying, just ask that little question and take your power back. Don't wake up and look at your phone and be depressed every day and not do anything about it when you can. You can. I just wanted to make sure that I said that. You know what? I really don't want to move on just yet. If you want to say something, I feel like I want to give you some time to reflect too.
Not really a reflection, more of a question that I have that maybe listeners will have as well. Single day shutdowns.
Right.
And seem highly ineffective. If you go spend that money the next day, then you didn't really hurt that corporation much.
Good point,
so. What's the idea behind this and how is it something that's sustainable? January 30th, nobody goes to work or school, nobody goes shopping. But if on the 31st or the 1st, we write back at it, then what did we really do?
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. It's just, I think the idea behind it is just to kind of like rattle everyone to show what strength we have, what we can do. It's sort of like, forgive this expression because I don't want to put any thoughts in anyone's heads, but this is sort of like the protest before the riot sort of thing. And this is a demonstration of the numbers and what we can affect, right? But for me and my house, we're well past a single day demonstration. We're on, like, I'm riding this wave until there's a different president that acknowledges the rest of our humanity and indeed seeks out and welcomes to the middle those who have historically been relegated to the margins of society. And this is why I was saying that this doesn't have to be something that you're participating in a single day. This, you can run this play as long as you like, and you can get other people to do the same. If you disagree with the government, be ungovernable. So you have the power to stop the money from moving. It just takes a more sustained campaign.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to The QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson with production assistance from Stephanie Schubert. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Ramses Jot from The QR Code. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
This is Peter Himmelman. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM.
Today on Wings.
Realigning with the value of life, Indigenous perspectives. The difference is that nothing that was required for the sustaining of life was ever made a commodity.
There's a river of birds in my grave.